We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome into the DNVR Rockies podcast brought to you by Strava Craft Coffee. Remember to use the promo code DNVR25. You'll get 25% off your entire purchase of that CBD-infused, deliciously rich, and potentially life-altering Strava Craft Coffee. I'm your host, Drew Kreisman. I'm the managing editor of DNVR Rockies. With me, as always, is beat writer Patrick Lyons. And on this one, we break down an eventful. I'm going to use the word eventful. We can maybe debate whether or not it was an entertaining series here with the Los Angeles Dodgers. Certainly from a pulled back perspective here, Patrick, the Rockies won a game and then played two that were very, very close. And I'd love to be sitting here and starting the conversation by going, what a series by the Rocks. There are a couple pitches here or there away from sweeping the Dodgers in LA after walking off on them the last time they played them at Coors and what's going on there. And or even flip side, just saying, hey, really, really nice. You know, they played them well, whatever it may be. They played them about as closely as you can and end up still losing the set. But boy, oh boy, was the strike zone a big part of every game in the set. Even Jack Corrigan at the end, I flipped over to the radio at the very end. You know, I've got the TV on. Then usually as we're getting ready for our post game, I flip on the radio and Jack Corrigan said, this is one of the worst groups of umpires I've seen in terms of being consistent with the strike zone. And it was just like, it's really too bad that I felt like it really did kind of define the second and third games of the series, especially. And not like it's what cost the Rockies. And they're not going to win anything. It's not what it's about, just in every way. I saw a lot of people saying in game two, like, yeah, but at least it was consistent both ways. It's like, great, he messed it up for everybody. Like, he turned that game into nonsense. And it was just like, so we'll get into the actual baseball in the field, Patrick. But that was frustrating to watch. I know some people say, hey, that's entertaining because that's part of it too. And now you're mad at that. But I don't know, man. It feels like the difference between, you know, real heel heat and go away heel heat. And that series got real close to I can't even watch this. It was infuriating.
It's definitely something that's frustrating for both sides when a strike zone has just vacillated so much between balls and strikes, and home plate umpire Jerry Meals being very tight with his strike zone until that ninth inning, and Kenley Jansen got, you know, maybe one call that went his way, and we saw John Gray, you know, kind of battling with those issues, and including one of the home runs given up to Chris Taylor, should have been an 0-2 count. Turns out it was a 1-1 count because of a pitch missed down in the zone. That was definitely a common theme, but it is a fair playing field for both teams, for better or worse. It's just one of those frustrating elements.
I disagree.
And that's, yeah. And look, we can go on ump arbiter and auditor, and it wouldn't surprise me if the Rockies came out on top. They had more benefits, right? Thankfully, we have some people serious? Out there.
Are you serious? Were you watching the same game that I just was? I wasn't even close. I was on baseball all game.
Well, when we talk about leverage.
Six pitches inside the strike zone that weren't called for strikes. The other Jay Gray had one.
There's no doubt about that. I think there were probably more calls. in that way. But when the Rockies were kind of maybe the benefactor for a certain call, I'm not saying that is the case, but I'm saying it wouldn't surprise me because, again, not every strike that is called a ball is the same, right? Obviously, bases loaded, 3-2 right. count in the ninth inning. That one is, you know, is going to shift the outcome of a game entirely, whereas the first pitch of the game is virtually meaningless. They're both one pitch that's called. That's all. That's my point. And so I'm looking forward to seeing some of the data on that. But again, it's, you know, we've seen it. There's other games in which, you know, the Rockies have, you know, been at the benefit, other games not. But it's frustrating, like you said.
None of it, yeah. This isn't even the point. The system can't be this bad. You shouldn't be able to miss calls. The thing about today is they weren't even close. It's one thing when you're missing pitches that are straddling the edge or it's got a ton of movement on it. But when you're missing stuff that's the entire baseball, a full baseball inside the strike zone, like, and this is why, like I said last time, and you're saying, well, it's good that you can, you know, take the emotion out of it because the Rockies aren't in it. It's like, no, you can take the veneer of the emotion out of it. The fact that people insist on making any conversation about the umpires being bad into a who did it or did it not benefit? Did it cost someone the game? Did it not cost the game? And that's not the point. This cannot continue. This is egregious. And you've got even people who have rules against talking about umpires and Jack Corrigan sitting there going like, I can't ignore what's right in front of my face. That's the point. That's the most important point is that
for sure
we all have access to the data. We can see it. And we've got to sit there and look at and watch the guy change his zone throughout the game and go, oh, man, it just, like you said, it's not good for anybody, regardless of in any individual game. It's ultimately bad for everyone. It's a net negative for everybody involved, the Dodgers and the Rockies included. But for example, let's transition this to on the field stuff, right? I'd love to be able to sit here and tell you that game two, Kyle Freeland. Man, he was fantastic. Look at his line. 7 innings, only gives up 1 run at Dodger Stadium against the Dodgers.
No walks.
But when you get an extra 2 or 3 inches of strike zone all night, and yes, it was consistent both ways, but I can't sit here and go, I feel super confident about the way I would have if Kyle Freeland had that same stat line, but with a good strike zone, with a fair strike zone, which was – you know, and again, some people say it's fair because it went both ways, but that's another way in which it's not. Maybe for that individual day's outcome, but ultimately I want a better read on the pitchers, all that kind of stuff. It's a long-term, there are long-term consequences that are very difficult to measure as well. So it's just like,
yeah,
Kyle was good, but he got
when we get the I'm looking forward to when we do get the technology so that it can be better than the human eye. And you know, it's for better or worse, and by no means am I arguing for inconsistent umpiring. But like you said, oh, you just want to get a better feel of, you know, what could have happened, what should have happened, how well did a guy do if we had some more consistency. You know, frankly, if every ballpark had the exact same dimensions, we'd be able to do that too. And of course, nobody wants that. But what we do want is better umpiring. Really, I think maybe the biggest element before we get back on the field, I think, is accountability, right? So while we wait for technology, it doesn't have to be the same right. system that we have with umpires and say, all right, let's just keep getting closer and closer to the cliff until, you know, the robots come in and save us. It's like, well, no, why are we backing up into this cliff here? Why are we falling over the edge and doing those things? And you're right. It's not fun. And you can even hear it when the Rockies get calls, you know, Jack Corrigan's not celebrating. Drew Goodman's not like, there we go. Now it's getting fair. It's like, all right, well, you know, that was an interesting take on that. right. To say the least. Right. So
the euphemisms they have to use. Well, that was a strike apparently, you know, that kind of stuff. Well, Rockies get the benefit of the doubt there. They do that one a lot. Right. And it's just like, you don't feel good about that.
And it's funny because earlier in the week, we were talking about all these, you know, the relationship between different sports and the similarities and, hey, would this be like in basketball? The funny thing is in baseball, I believe they are not calling balls and strikes based on what team is out there. Now, they might give a little makeup call. We saw that the other night, Ryan McMahon's at that. I think that was Friday night, right? And you go, okay, whatever, you know, it is what it is. But
Kenley, you know, got Kenley got a makeup call. He had a guy struck out, didn't get strike three on an 0-2 pitch again, entire baseball in there. And then a batter later pitches a little bit outside.
Yeah.
Carrying him up, but that doesn't even it out.
But that's a single, but that's a one, that's an isolated incident. It's not, okay, who's out there? Because we would see a lot crazier things in the strike zone. Whereas in the NBA, we know you're like, got it. Who's got the ball? Oh, okay. You looked at him, dude. I saw the side eye. That's a foul. That's going to be a T now. You gave me side eye, and you're like, wow, this is where we're at.
Throwing guys out.
So yeah, you know, we'll get there, and it's just frustrating. Look, more importantly, right, for us, again, we get to debate about it, and we get to go on, we get to flush, but it does impact, you know, certain players, their careers, and their stat lines, and like, how good was I? And, you know, thankfully, again, it's one of the reasons why you still need scouts. You still need baseball people. You can't just rely on the number crunchers. They have their value in our game, but you can't just have the number crunchers to look at certain statistics and say, hey, this guy was good, this guy wasn't. Well, you don't know the whole story. And yeah, I think balls and strikes and safe and out, and this should have been overturned and it wasn't. That's a very small portion of a player's career, but it can be the difference of, do we designate him for assignment? Do we pick this guy up off of waivers? It still tells the story, and I think baseball still needs to strive towards getting those things correct. So we do know who deserves to be there, who has performed well, and who has not.
Yeah. Perfect example. Today's draft king of the game for the Colorado Rockies, starting pitcher John Gray, goes 5 innings, gives up a couple of runs, both on home runs to Chris Taylor. Gets a 4 punch, and you go, well, he threw over 100 pitches in 5 innings. So again, back to your point, you might be going, is that really a great outing? But given full context of the situation and the fact that he had a number of innings extended that should not have been because of a very tight strike zone while he was out there, is when the relievers came in, it got a little wider. But you know, he didn't give in. He didn't end up just saying, well, I'm going to pipe one right down the middle. The first homer he gave up to Chris Taylor, that slider was okay. Not great, but okay. Taylor just went down and got it. Second one, mistake pitch. It happens. But beyond that, you know, 2 pitches he'd like to have back, much like Kyle Freeland the day before with the 1 pitch he'd like to have back. That's a pretty solid back-to-back couple of starts for the Rockies on the road against the Dodgers team that is struggling. But still, you never, like, the history between these two teams, there's no reason to believe that the Rockies pitchers just should be able to go out in Dodger Stadium and more or less shut those guys down. So nice to see when they do.
Especially when the Dodgers are so competitive against the Giants. And yes, lost 2 heartbreaking games, lost 3 or 4 in that series. But I love your point about, again, how do you evaluate certain performances? You know, Gray did get up to that 100 pitch count. Walk 3 guys. You know, that contributes to it. But again, with Jerry Meal's strike zone and all that stuff, that's a certain facet of it. And you go, oh man, you know, does he have any kind of clauses in his contract that says, you know, hey, you'll get so many bonuses for quality starts? 5 innings, 2 earned runs is not a quality start.
Yeah.
And so is that X amount of dollars? And again, we know John Gray's not thinking about that. He's not worrying about that. You know, he's going to get that little bonus check at the end of the year, whatever it is, what it is. Right. But for him going out there to grind, to not have the numbers, you know, kind of reflect his performance statistically here in this spot today, you know, is obviously disappointing. You got, I do like the symmetry of the, you got 2 solo homers, Chris Taylor, Jay Gray against Jay Gray, Josiah Gray and John Gray, and Sonny Gray even started, I think, today too for Cincinnati. So that was, you know, certainly something interesting. You have a lot of California ball players and Fuentes and Connor Joe getting to play there in LA. There are a lot of interesting storylines, but definitely strange to think that, again, this team that we thought was the world beaters and people were, you know, whispering, oh, this could be the greatest team assembled. You know, they could be chasing the Yankees 1998 record, which, again, that's something so hard to put on a team. It's not necessarily fair, but that's how high the expectations were.
Comfortably 100 win team.
Well, for sure. Right.
That they would be closer to 110 than 100, you know, that they.
And for the Rockies to be contending at this point in the year, even with still John Gray and still Michael Givens and still Trevor Story, 3 guys, you go, well, come on, they're going to be at the top of a lot of teams' wish list. Even still, with those guys, you go, come on, the Rockies can't possibly hang. And sure, at the end of the day, they only won one of the three, but they're very competitive. You know, that's definitely you know, a little feather in their cap, I think, to go in there and grind in this series. Start of the road trip, really positive. You know, now they go to, well, they don't go to LA. They're already in LA. Well, they go to Anaheim, I should say.
They go across the highway.
They go to the Anaheim area of Los Angeles. Yeah. You know, not to, you know, be confused with the Lodo area of Denver. Yes, all those things are really much the same. But yeah, they'll go to play the Angels for three before the Padres and whoever they got on their roster today. They of course acquired Pirates second baseman Adam Frazier. So they're getting themselves loaded. But again, you know, I took the under on the 2.5.
Yeah,
they're making it interesting. And even with Adam Frazier and whoever else AJ Preller, GM of the Padres, wants to add in San Diego, wouldn't be totally crazy for the Rockies to not only be competitive, but maybe even to take two wins in San Diego. We'll see what happens when we get there.
We'll see. But again, I was predicting nothing but doom and gloom for this road trip. Our guy Mark here is back in the comments, you know, had him winning two in LA. And I got to say,
yeah,
he was closer to the truth than those of us that had him getting totally stomped by the Dodgers, because you were one play this way or the other in either of those games away. You know, the Rockies had the bases loaded, one out, Fuentes at the plate, and he swings at three that are out of the zone in this one, and that's a really tough, bad at-bat there. If he just stands there with the bat on his shoulders, that could become a big inning for the Rockies. That's your second win right there. Or, you know, they had their opportunities all right there to do it. But I do want to break down, Patrick, and I'll go ahead and toast it. I'm still on Strava Craft coffee hours, but I will toast my theoretical Breck Brew and Breck Seltzy on this day to whatever the hell went on at the end of game one. We're about to dive really deep into it here in just a second, because it was one of the most hilarious things I've ever seen in my entire life, not even just in sports, in my life. And we're going to get to it in just a second. But if you didn't see it, or you want to relive it as we do this, now's the great time to crack open the Breck Brew, the Breck Seltzy. Get yourself nice and sunk in. Get it down at the King Supers at your liquor store. You get a bigger one down at the DNVR bar. If you're a member, do become a member today by subscribing to the DNVR.com. You can get access to the Discord channel. You get discounts on stuff all the time. And you get to come and, I already said, hang out with us in the Discord channel. But that's where we're always chatting baseball 24/7, planning out trades for the future, doing that stuff, talking movies and TV and video games and just anything else that you want to talk about, having a good time. And again, you can get all that written content by subscribing to the DNVR.com. Do become a member of the family today. And like I said, this is one of those stories, man. This is one of those things that even if you watched it, you're going to want to special enjoy this. So might I also recommend, you know, do what you will, Breck Brews alongside, but also a little bit of Solace Meds. Some Solace Meds put you in the right frame of mind for what we're about to get into here. Solace Meds, absolutely fantastic stuff. The place right down by the DMVR bar, they're so nice there. They're so cool. They've got everything that you can possibly imagine in there too. And you get 20% off just for saying DNVR out loud. If you go online, make sure you put DNVR20 in as your code. You'll get 20% off. And down, it's at the Wheat Ridge one, you'll get the free Solace Bar or King Cone. But they've got four locations, one in Fort Collins, one in Wheat Ridge, one on Broadway. And again, that one on East Colfax, it's just blocks away from the DNVR bar. They've always got specials in there, anything and everything under the sun that you could need. So get your Solace Meds and get in for this, because Patrick, so first of all, let's go back to all the way back to game one and start at the beginning, where the Rockies came back late.
Starting even earlier than that, 3-0 after one inning.
Yeah.
And it seemed like it was going to be exactly as we sort of drew it up. This idea that, again, Chi-Chi, Freeland, Gray was the recipe. Last weekend in Coors Field was okay. But again, a team getting a second crack in their home ballpark, seeing the exact same pitchers that they just saw, that familiarity is going to breed confidence and is not going to be a good for the opposing team. And yet, even despite that 3-0 early lead, somehow, some way, even 4-1, after five innings, you go, well, yeah, this is what's to be expected. LA is supposed to be these world beaters. Three-game sweep. Okay, yeah, that's probably how it should go. At least it's not 7-1 or 10-1. Right? It's 4-1.
4-1.
All right.
Nothing going. All right. But this Rockies offense, this Rockies road offense in this place then scores two in the sixth, but loses some of that momentum by giving one back in the bottom. Obviously, the offense didn't do that, right? So even there, you're like, you did a thing. You made it a close game, but even then get one back. You're like, what's going on here? But then two again in the eighth to tie it up. And then slamming Sammy Hilliard.
Wow.
Who, you know, was striking out about 40% of the time. And so he had to get sent down to AAA, where he continued to strike out about 30% of the time. And just has had a rough year in a lot of ways. But goes out there and just launches one into the night to give the Rockies the lead in the ninth inning in LA. And you're going, what are we even watching? Right? Like already this is now, we're in really weird territory. The Rockies have scored three late runs to take the lead in LA. When was the last time you wrote that down on the Twitter machine?
Yeah, that alone, you're right, in and of itself was absolutely wild. I think that was the first time at Dodger Stadium ever that the Rockies had a pinch hit homer in the ninth inning or later. And so Sam Hilliard, a guy who coming out of the All-Star break was not expected to be a part of this team. And, you know, with the fact that, you know, in the last couple of years when they've changed the collective bargaining agreement a little bit and altered it so that there's essentially going to be no September call-ups, you know, so we don't have those 4.5 hour games because of substitutions and double switches, even with three batter minimum rule. Again, if you got more players on your bench, you might as well use them.
Right.
And if we don't have those added players on the bench, we might not see the best players in AAA. So Sam Hilliard might be hitting the cover off the ball when he does make contact, as you said, still striking out more than he should. And you go, well, Tapia's fine. Blackman's fine. Daza is doing great. Hampson's going in there. There's just no room. Right. Let him keep playing. Let him keep doing his thing. So a guy that you just don't even expect to be on the roster,
he's
coming
only
out of
on
the break
because of the COVID scare. He's only
absolutely
in this
exactly
position. It's like, yeah.
It's why you stay ready. It's right. Why you stay ready.
Yeah. So, okay. Hilliard hits the ninth inning home run, but still everybody knows it's the Rockies bullpen. It's the Rockies bullpen. And Daniel Bard has had such a tough year, and he goes out there and immediately, it's all of our jobs. We do get paid to analyze baseball and explain it to you. And we do our absolute very best, but there are things in life like Scott Oberg, brain went into a different, he's done it before. He did it in a season, but like Daniel Bard going out there. And I mean, he couldn't hit his spot within a foot. He had two options, way out of the zone so that Elias Diaz is doing like gymnastics behind the plate to get it, or piping it right down the middle. For the first four batters he faced, that's all he could do. And he got way behind in counts and then piped a couple for a couple of singles. And then walked a batter. There's a wild pitch in there.
Wild pitch before the walk, yeah. Getting into full counts, like can't find it. Walks home Justin Turner.
Walks
high ball Turner. Game. And there's no outs. There's no outs right now in the ninth.
He's faced four guys. He hasn't gotten any of them out. He's thrown maybe six total strikes. And then he strikes out the side. And then all of a sudden, he started throwing shit. And I'm just like,
on 11 pitches, too. I think it was 11 pitches.
I don't know. Can you explain that to me?
No. Well, I think you almost did in saying, like, look, you just got to throw it right down the middle. So, okay, fine. Let them beat you. Don't beat yourself. So you know what? Just try to throw it right past them. And I think that was ultimately what he did. He said, hey, what could be worse, right? At least let's end this thing a little bit quicker. Boom. Yeah. And what do you know?
Run to blow the game. So I just can't walk in another one. So yeah.
I want to say, you know, at that point he got the job done and you go, well, but he blew the save and they went to extras. Well, at that point he got the job done. He failed the first one, but then he got the second one done there. And I don't know, again, it's one of the reasons why I think the offers on him might be somewhat underwhelming, even with another year of control. Cause sure. You know, if he could come to spring training again, based on his age, and it just might not be there at all. And so, yeah, you're on paper contractually, you got him for another year, but you know, what are you getting this year? And the inconsistency again, maybe a team can look at him and say, I know what he did for those first four batters and why it was so off the mark. And I know what he did for those three and how he got it together. And so we could do that. And there are people, you know, in the game that have those beliefs and that can pick up that stuff, right? And the pitch tipping and all that, right? So it's very well within the realm of possibilities. So we'll kind of see what happens with that. Yeah. But that was, yeah, just a constant back and forth of emotions. And it was a slow trickle too, right? With the 3-0,
right,
4-1, and you're like, all right, they're coming back a little bit, and they lose some ground. Two steps forward and one step back. And then all of a sudden it was just boom, 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 boom. And then we go to the 10th.
Because you're thinking to yourself, any well-conditioned or poorly conditioned and traumatized like a Saw victim, Colorado
Rockies. Properly conditioned is the word. Properly conditioned.
Properly conditioned Colorado Rockies fan thought, well, okay, you guys might go on the podcast later on the Silver Linings podcast and heap all this praise on Daniel Bard for blowing it, but then not blowing it, which is way harder to do than it sounds. I've been watching a lot of in the lead up to the Olympics. There's this extraordinary documentary on Peacock. If you guys, it's for free. If you don't have to pay the premium for it. Called Golden, about the USA gymnastics team and the young women like going to be, and it's like, if you're having your best day and you're on that balance beam and you rock and you do everything and it's awesome, great. You know what's really, really friggin' hard to do? Get back on that thing if you fell on your first jump. Now you've got the rest of your routine to do and you've still got to compete. There's, you know, you're trying to get to the Olympics. But if you fell, like, there's no way to hide that you fell off the balance beam. And that's what happened to Daniel Bard, right? He just went out, fell straight on his face. And I'm thinking, get him out of there, buddy. Everyone was thinking, get him out of there, buddy. But who's going to come in and strike out the side and not give up any other runs? Nobody in that bullpen is going to do that. So you have to give Daniel Bard credit for doing that. But in any other circumstance, any properly conditioned Rocky is going to go, way to delay the inevitable, Daniel. Great. Now we're going to play in extras in their ballpark and they'll walk this off in the 10th or the 11th or the 12th. But we're going to watch more inept Rockies offense not be able to produce, even though they're spotting them a runner at second base. And then boom.
And then boom. Boom. I can't believe how they were able to just go off. And again, you kind of understand. And I mean, look, the Dodgers, they grow them on trees, so it doesn't necessarily matter. Yeah. You know, who's in there at that point, right? You're like, well, it wasn't Kenley Jansen. Like, all right. Still, Jimmy Scherfey's having a decent year. And you go, if the Dodgers are believing in Jimmy Scherfey, then all right, Jimmy Scherfey might be a thing. Why not? Jake McGee was a thing last year, and he's got a World Series ring to show for it. So it might be a thing.
Grab these. When you can just grab Bruce Dar Graterol and just be like, I don't know, I'll go pitch the 7th or whatever. And like, come on, dude, whatever, man. This guy's just sitting on triple digits and stuff.
And another D. Nunez, too. That was right. I was not keeping up on the career of Darian Nunez, but good on him. Like two D. Nunez's and two J. Grays in the same series. So they're
right.
It's like the Dodgers are quite literally cloning these guys. You know, Yankees trade for him and sign him. Dodgers are cloning them and getting the best out of them. So yeah, again, any other team, you know, there's probably role reversal, and you say, oh, of course, you know, yeah, what do you expect out of Jimmy Scherfy? But for the Dodgers, you go, look, Jimmy Scherfy could be an all-star the second half of the season.
Because
he's a Dodger, and they just know how to work with these guys. So, and again, it doesn't matter. The Rockies don't care. They're not going, yeah, it would have been better if it was somebody else. Look, they got the job done.
Yeah,
and it was, yeah, it was just, you know, so exciting to see that and to go through the plays. To start the 10th, Trevor Story, or Hampson, of course, starts on second base. Trevor Story, boom, singles to left field. Hampson immediately scores. And Story ends up advancing to second base. Even better, Charlie Blackmon homers to right center field. I think he was in somewhat of a home run drought. And yeah, that was pretty quick. Nothing happened the rest of the inning, but that was all you needed. It's interesting, just two, you know, a single and a big bop of a home run gives you three runs.
Yep.
It's like you hit the bonus baseball there once you get an extra innings. Right. In fact, there you go. That's it right there. That's the bonus ghost baseball runner, or the zombie runner, or the Manfred man, whatever you want to call that runner out on second base. You hadn't heard that one before. It's good. Revved up like a deuce. Manfred bad. But you get a little bonus run there.
Yeah.
When you do it that way. And that was the final dagger. You think. You never know. And again, when you're playing the Dodgers. Well,
they got to send out Lucas Gilbreth back out there to try to pick up this save now at Dodgers Stadium. Like I said, this game was hilarious. Like, that was so, like I still thought, nope, Dodgers about to put four runs on the board right now.
Have surprised. Yeah.
It wouldn't have been shocking. And then Gilbreth, just nice, easy, quiet. They didn't even get their California, their Manfred man. They didn't even cash in their Manfred man. They got nothing. They went out with a whole ass whimper. And it was just like, oh my God. I could not believe it. I seriously was laughing for like 30 straight minutes after that game.
Rocky's Twitter was definitely in some kind of way of like, wow, all right, look at that. You can get a reward for staying inside on a Friday night to watch this team and in this season. And hey, there you go. You had a nice little laugh.
Yeah.
It'll keep you warm in the wintertime for a little bit, you know?
That was that's one of those random games that I think I'll still remember a couple of years from now. We'll be like, remember that time Daniel Bard basically walked in? He didn't walk the bases loaded and walk the runner in, but he basically did. The two singles were gimme singles, and he had nothing.
Mike Redmond knows how to push all the right buttons. Got to give Mike Redmond all the credit in the world there.
Right. As a manager.
Would Bud Black have won that game?
Just left him out. That's actually a great point. But how much actual time do you think there was between Justin Turner being walked in and Charlie Blackmon's home run?
Wow, that's really good. Bard was just firing there pretty tight. I mean, well, that's the thing is it would probably 15 minutes does seem like a lot. Even if it was 10 minutes,
I think it was 8 to 10 minutes.
But 10 minutes sounds way longer, and even 8 minutes seems way longer than it feels in game time, right? Because, you know, you get 2 minutes just for the commercial. You cut that out. And then again, with each pitch, you're waiting for the game to be over. Like, all right, we're going to get a base hit here. Yeah. Like, it's about to happen.
Like you said, 11 pitches, struck out the side, quick.
AJ Pollock's going to single here with two outs, and it doesn't happen. And then all of a sudden, it goes down. It's such a quick turnaround.
It was absolutely wild. Absolutely wild. I will be enjoying, by the way, with all that Breck Brew and Solace Meds, you know that means that the next stop is Illegal Pete's. That's where you go after that. You're feeling a little bit of munchy time. You got to get your Illegal Pete's. They got one again. It's actually a nice little row there on Colfax. You can just go down to Illegal Pete's. Or if you're down in the Lodo area, they got one out there. Yeah, they got them all over the place. I assume you know where your closest Illegal Pete's is. Everyone should know. I don't know if they have like Breck Brew's got the Breck Brew tracker on their app, there really should be an illegal Pete's tracker. Just, you know, and if not, get on Google Maps, type it in. They're fantastic. They'll hook you up with a free draft beer or house marg with the purchase of an adult entree, by the way, if you just show them a ticket to an event you've gone to today, any ticket for any kind of event out there, trying to revitalize that Denver community. They've also got happy hours from 3 to 6 every day. It's dollar off drafts, dollar off house and coin style margs. They've got $20 party margaritas, great big things. It's a lot of fun. You know, they got great queso. They got, I'm a big burrito guy, that stack up that burrito. If you go burrito bowl, like our guy Spencer, either way, illegal.
With the potatoes.
You gotta be on that. All right. You did mention, I was maybe going to stay away from this a little bit, but since Will asked and you mentioned, you know, the Adam Frazier deal and some of the trade stuff heating up. And I saw a lot of people asking, you know, will this have been John Gray's last game with the Colorado Rockies? We asked that, you know, about Trevor Story after their last home game. Was his last home game. And I really, really don't think so. At this point, I would be pretty shocked if they traded John Gray, just giving everything that I've heard publicly and privately from all kinds of people in and around the situation.
And looking at the Rockies' track record, like what do they do at the trade deadline?
Well, I don't think that has anything to do with it. That has nothing to do with it.
Oh no, I'm saying that's further evidence. Cause I agree. We're on the same page. I think we both said at the beginning of the season, no, they're not going to trade Gray. You thought they would trade Story. I didn't. We'll kind of wait to see what happens. But we know they don't do too much at the trade deadline.
Well, that's
not these kind of seasons.
That's not true. That was only true during the Jeff Breidich administration, and he's not the GM anymore. They would do stuff like that, not all the time, every time, but during the Dan O'Dowd administration, they would absolutely make those kinds of selling trades. Probably the most obvious example of it being when they sold off from Matt Holliday in a very similar situation to get Cargo and Houston Street and all of that. But
that was an off-season deal, though. That's what I mean. I just mean at the trade deadline. Not trading.
Wait.
Yeah, we know Rockies make some good trades, but I mean,
no, that was at the deadline. I'm pretty sure. I'd have to go back. It was a while. I'm pretty sure that the Matt Holliday trade was in season. But anyway,
so it's actually working.
That was
on
almost
something.
More of a Jeff Breidich thing than a Rockies thing to like not make trades at the trade deadline, except in the years where they were competing and he was trying to bring guys in and they were trying to buy or whatever. But again, I don't think the John Gray thing has anything to do with any of that. It has everything to do with the team's relationship with John Gray and their plan to build around the starting rotation that they currently have. And so I think for all of those reasons, and the fact that Gray has mutual interest with the team is the other thing that sets it apart from stuff like where Trevor Story is at right now. Obviously where, you know, Nolan was at. Where Tula was at was a little bit. That was a little bit different. I guess that's kind of a unique situation because Tula really did not want to get traded.
That was unique. Yeah.
But then he also, like, knew he was probably going to get traded, so he wanted to get traded to certain places. I think that one's too hard to compare to any of these other ones. But the Story and Gray situations are completely different from each other. And so when it comes to John Gray, I just don't think that there's a chance there. And after seeing, you know, the return on this deal from Frazier, like this is, unless the Pirates are just really, and they're pretty terrible. It's like, it doesn't look like a great seller's market either. And there's been a lot of writing on this subject coming up to this trade deadline about how, you know, there's only a handful of teams that are buying it all. Everybody else is trying to sell, which means there's only so many people out there to make you offers anyway. And so I just think especially for John Gray, they're not going to get blown away by an offer for him. Cause I don't think there's anybody out there that really sees him as the thing that puts them over the top. Right. So you're not going to get anything super great for John Gray anyway. So
I think if you couple them, I think that's the element too, is one of the top pitching, one of the top starting pitchers on the market, John Gray, one of the top position players, Trevor Story, one of the top relievers and Michael Givens. You go throw all three of them in a deal and that could be where you really get the most bang for your buck. And I think that's that's where the, you know, I think the Rockies could make the biggest, you know, improvements for the future. You're right. I don't think they're going to move either of those two guys. And I really think that's a misstep. You know, they have an opportunity to improve the future of the franchise and still bring back John Gray. You can have your cake and eat it too.
Also be honest about it. That's,
well, I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means. It never happens. I don't know what
that means. I said it almost never.
What does that mean? What does that mean? It almost
where a guy gets traded off of a team and then comes right back to them in the off season. Like that's there's a reason.
Yeah, we said that.
Right.
But it's not
possible. Don't normally go right back to teams that just traded them away. That's
because sure. And again, if you are communicating with John Gray, you might even be able to get that done. I think one of the, you know, one of the things I've been noticing, one of the trends around Major League Baseball are teams talking with players ahead of, you know, the potential, you know, they are negotiations, but potential work strife, if you will, between the Players Association and Major League Baseball is trying to work out, you know, some extensions. We saw Lance Lynn come to a deal like that, Matt Barnes. The Twins were working with Byron Buxton to see if they could extend him. Yeah. And Byron Buxton and his camp said, like, you know what? No, thank you. So now they're going to turn around and trade him. So,
which is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, and right. Hey, look, they've got to do what they got to do as far as, you know, protecting their organization and protecting the future of their franchise and building a contender. And I think the thing that, you know, I'm sure is probably disappointing for a lot of Rockies fans is because the Rockies are so, you know, shorthanded in the front office with all the departures that they've had and, you know, not having a definitive GM in place. And again, more than anything, just being so shorthanded, they kind of can't do that. They can't say, hey, John, can we really get this extension maybe done before the trade deadline? And if not, then we can trade you and again, take our chances in signing in the offseason. So, I mean, that's unfortunate that they're not really going to have that opportunity. But, you know, again, you look back and as you said, the Tulo deal was really its own thing. But that was the last time that the Rockies, so we know that they made the postseason in 17 and 18 and all the other years since then, you know, they haven't really been necessarily in the hunt. 2020 was very much a strange one. We could even throw that out, even though they were an under 500 team. But just that Tulo deal in 2015 was the only one. The previous trade that the Rockies had made, I mean, they had the Jorge De La Rosa trade to the Orioles for Eduardo Rodriguez in 2014. That unfortunately, you know, was nixed by Dick Monfort. That obviously would have helped the franchise, I think, in a major way, bringing a young starting pitcher like that into the organization. But the only other trade besides the Tulo one, which is almost its own thing, was July 27th, 2012. Marco Scudero to the San Francisco Giants. So I understand that, you know, a certain general manager was at the helm for much of that time, but a certain owner was also at the helm at that time. So I think that's also part of the story for the Rockies as well.
That you mentioned one of the ones that the owner actually did nix there, but it was a GM philosophy. Dylan Dan wasn't about not making moves and scared to move on from named players or any of that stuff. It was,
but it didn't happen.
So we really have no
It didn't
idea.
Happen after that.
Okay.
We don't necessarily have to argue about that.
Because Jeff Breidich had a whole philosophy on that for better.
Do you agree with that?
A lot of times it was for.
Would you have done things differently? I guess I should.
Than what Jeff Breidich did?
Yeah, like when they were out of it, you know. And okay. Yeah, you can improve the future of your franchise because that's the thing. In besides the Scudero deal in 2012 and 13 and 14, they could have been making trades and acquiring players that could have been very useful to the organization in 17 and 18 to possibly have deeper postseason runs. Not necessarily even players on the field. Like, oh, you would have gotten better players than, you know, Parra, Cargo, etc. But you could have had more pieces to deal with and maybe upgraded even more than just Lucroy.
That
Meshack,
is always theoretically possible. Yeah, yes. It's just that's always theoretically possible. I really liked your analogy from month or so ago about buying and selling houses. Like, you're always going to sit there and go, oh, we could have gotten a little more value here. We could have gotten a little better deal here. We could have got, there's always that possibility. And yes, I said over and over again, I said at the time that I would have done a lot of things differently. I don't believe that you, when your team is bad, you have to trade every good player off of it, or every,
you don't have to,
in contract. And I don't believe that that automatically, I don't believe that you should. I don't believe that that makes you automatically better. I don't believe that that's been.
You're right. It doesn't automatically.
Yeah. And I think there are a lot of ways that can go bad, that can extend periods of time when you're not relevant, that can push your window further away. I think there's a lot of negatives that can come out of just trading guys because they're on expiring deals, and that's the only, or because they're bad. And again, it's not,
that's just not going to make you worse in the future. Because if a guy's a free agent and you trade him, you're not making yourself worse.
Unless you're actually bringing a guy back, the expiring deals are different. But saying you've got to trade every single good player on your team because you're a bad team right now,
do you think that's what I'm saying?
No, but not at all. But there are a lot of people that think. Yeah, I mean, that's basically the argument for trading Germán Márquez.
Like, right, and that's an off-season deal. That's an off-season deal.
But again, let's not act like there aren't a lot of really well-respected people out there acting like that's something that if the Rockies don't do, they're stupid. So, yeah, like...
I think they should. I think that is something they should do. But I don't know Germán Márquez? But I don't know that that's necessary. Yes, and again, we've touched on it before. Again, talking with.
So you do believe they should trade every good player just because they're bad right now? I mean, you believe they should trade every good player off of their roster?
Not right now. Again, a trade for Germán Márquez is best done in the off season. If the Rockies aren't going to be contending in the next couple of years, which I don't think they are, and I think you've even said it, that next year they're not going to be contenders. 2023, they're probably not going to be contenders. You know, go back and listen to the John Boy show. He asked you that. And so again, if we're talking about,
I don't know about 23. I push back on that. I'm not selling out that whole future. I think that's silly. I really do.
But and also after the 2023 season, Tapia, Ryan McMahon, Kyle Freeland, Antonio Senzatella, those guys are all free agents.
Assuming
they're
none
gone.
Of those contracts are renegotiated or extended before any time.
This is a big off season. This is a big off season for that.
And there will be a new GM and a whole new staff and a whole new analytics team. It's going to be a completely –
You have a lot of faith in ownership to be doing these things.
Patrick, don't do that. Don't say you have a lot of faith in ownership.
Well, you said there's going to be a new GM, and I don't know that there's going to be. We don't know that, right?
They've said multiple times they're going to go out and get a new GM. They've said this publicly. They've released the public statement. They're going to do a whole GM search. Don't do that. Don't put me in that spot where I've got to be the Dick Monfort guy, where I'm the guy who has faith.
Well, no, I'm not trying to do that. But you are also taking them at their word.
Statements that he made.
Okay? You are also taking them at their word. And I don't necessarily know that that's going to be true. And again, if Bill Schmidt does a great job, at the same time, I wouldn't be, you know, Dick Monfort's going to go, look, my guy did it. I like what he did. He did this, that, and the other. He did some things that I asked him to do that, again, fans and the media may not necessarily, you know, think is best for the organization. But look, Dick might say, Bill, you did the job that I asked, even a little bit better. You deserve, you know, to keep the reins. And so I wouldn't necessarily begrudge Dick for having that mentality. At the same time, I don't think that that's the best call. And so I don't necessarily trust that that's the case going forward. And so I also have to ask the question about, like you said, with extensions should have been done already for those guys. We've been saying it for 2 years. Once you get close to the free agency, now guys they can smell free agency. You know, the turn of the calendar in January 1st of next year, Ryan McMahon, Tapia, Freeland, Senzatella can all go next year, at the end of next year, I can be a free agent. It's already too late by that point. I'm not saying those deals can't get done. I'm not one of those definitive guys like that. But I'm saying there's a lot of things that have been mismanaged as far as trying to keep there and be an open window, be competitive. And look, if it's not going to be there, if it's not going to happen.
Until they happen or don't. And this raking the Rockies over the coals for shit that has not happened yet. And then acting like I have faith
And what am I ranking them over the Colts?
Belief in the Rockies, because all I'm doing is saying, let's wait and see if Bill Schmidt's a different human being than Jeff Breidich. Holy cow. That should not be a controversial.
But you had a, you wrote an article last year saying that the buck stops with Dick Monfort. And I, you're right.
What else did I say?
You
that
can't
article?
Necessarily you shift that.
That article without all the things I said about how Jeff Breidich was a major problem and that moving on from him.
Oh, yeah, we know that.
The most important thing that the Rockies could do and that putting the team mm-hmm. in charge of somebody else's charge was going to make a massive difference. So acting like just because I said, yeah, ultimately Dick Monfort has made a lot of bad decisions and those need to change. And I enumerated the specific things that needed to change, included hiring a team president and promising to step away from baseball operations, both of which he's done since then. I'm not going to turn around and be like, hey, I'm not giving you credit for doing exactly the stuff I said you should do. And I'm not going to turn around and be like, well, Bill Schmidt's going to run things exactly the same way Jeff Breidich did, because ultimately he's just running things the way Dick Monfort wants him to, because everyone who works under Dick Monfort is a Dick Monfort clone or a yes man or any of that other crap, because it's just not true. It's not even true for the last two GMs that they had. It has nothing to do, absolutely nothing to do with faith or belief in Dick Monfort or the Rockies as an organization or any of that crap. It has everything to do with not calling it until I see it.
Simple. And from what you and so what you've seen,
it's not faith. It's not optimism. It's not belief. Just gonna see what they do.
And you believe they're gonna do good things then?
I don't know, but I don't automatically believe they're gonna do bad things.
And you, is that what you think I think?
The non-objective.
Is that how you think I feel?
Yes,
or
you just
or,
said all this stuff that they're going to do.
Or am I analyzing?
Already messed up this stuff.
Yeah. So what I'm doing is I'm analyzing. I'm taking evidence from what I've seen and making a prediction based off of it. So what are your? So you don't have any predictions? You're a pundit. You're on a podcast, and you don't have any predictions.
I've said this 100 times on this podcast. If I said it ever, I hate the prediction game. I think it's crap journalism. I think guessing, especially 3, 4,
we're on a
5 years
this isn't journalism.
Into the future is, yeah, it is. But I can't stand that guessing 4, 5, 6 years in. But other people do it. Fine. I'm asked to do it. Fine. It's my least favorite part of the job when people say, "What do you think
that.
The Rockies are going to do?" At the trade deadline, you know, I'll answer the question. I don't think they're going to trade John Gray. I still do think they're going to trade Trevor Story. But the reason I don't like doing that is because then if they don't, then I got to come back and go, oh, my God, you guys, I said they were going to trade Trevor Story, and they didn't. So in addition to now everyone being pissed that they didn't do this thing they wanted them to do, I'm going to be like, well, am I against it because I said they weren't going to do it? Or am I just saying – just,
but are you saying that? So mean what you say and say what you mean. You're saying they are going to trade Trevor Story, or you think they should trade Trevor Story? Those are two different things.
Yeah, I don't have a strong position. I think they should trade Trevor Story.
Should, and that's a key word. That's what we're talking about.
Wait. There's a lot more to that sentence.
That's fine, but that's a key piece. Continue. You can continue, but that's a huge piece. We're just saying should.
I think they should trade Trevor Story if they get an offer that is more valuable than the compensatory pick they will get if they keep it. I don't know that they're going to get that offer. So what I'm not prepared to do, again, as a part of this conversation, is if they don't trade him, immediately assume they got a bunch of great offers for him and they decided not to do it because the Rockies don't know what they're doing. I'm going to try to find out a little bit. What was out
and
there?
And that's very
what
specific.
Were they actually offered?
That's very specific.
After the fact. Yeah.
That's very specific. You saying, oh, we're assuming that they've gotten all these great offers. No. We don't have to assume that. And again, I hope that we can have a conversation of you and me, not talking about what Rocky's Twitter or anybody else is saying and what people do in national media. It's just you and me. So I would never assume, oh, the Rockies must have gotten a great offer and I don't trust that they did a great job. What we could say is because Rockies should trade a player that they're not going to keep around,
only
is that they've missed
the right offer.
Is that they've mismanaged the situation?
See, no.
You don't think they would have gotten a better offer? You don't think they would have gotten a better
offer
in November, December, January, February?
I'm not prepared to do that. That's that's, again, you may not think it's journalism. I do. I care about that.
Well, here's a piece of evidence. The Rockies did say they weren't going to listen to offers on Trevor Story. Had they been listening to offers,
for a week.
They said it was longer than a week.
No, they said they went dark for 1 week for the All-Star week. They said they weren't going to trade him before the All-Star game, but they didn't turn off offers. I know for a fact they were listening to offers before that week. They went dark for 1 week.
I don't believe that for a second, because they would have traded a guy that was going to be in the Home Run Derby or a guy that they were worried about being an All-Star for another team and deal with that whole thing all over again with Nolan Arenado.
Yes. They were listening to deals before that. They were absolutely getting offers from people before the All-Star break. Yes. Now, they weren't good. They weren't good offers. And that's why the Rockies didn't move on anything. And again, like, no, unless you show me a deal that the Rockies should have done, I'm not going to say they definitely mismanaged the situation because they should have traded Trevor Story. I don't think that's fair analysis. I think
I
didn't let you cut me off with that. They should trade Trevor Story. That is not my
position. I wasn't trying to cut you off. I was trying to point out the shit.
Well, I know, but I'm saying.
Because if they don't trade him, you don't have to come back and say anything. You don't have to come back and go, oh, well. If they don't trade
Trevor Story, it's probably because they didn't get any offers that were more valuable than the compensatory pick that they're going to get just for keeping him.
And that's fine.
And that's perfectly fine. And that's.
Yeah.
And so, but you're going to come on and say, no, they mismanaged it because they should have traded him.
Yeah. Yeah, so right. So the Rockies, you know, Dick Monfort said, hey, this is a competitive team that, you know, I expect to do some things.
It's just
– So he said this is – so here's what we – let me know if you think this is fair. Besides even getting into the details of the front office being shorthanded, which they were not shorthanded at the beginning of the season, in the offseason. They weren't – they're normal, full strength. You know, they did have a much smaller – analytics department. Analytics
team left in the offseason,
That's kind of crushing, because that's ultimately where my point is. They looked at this team, they evaluated it and said, look, we think we maybe can make the postseason.
No,
because I think if they would have been able to evaluate it properly, don't you think if you were able to, if you were a general manager or an owner of a team and you properly evaluated your team, don't you think you would have said, well, look, can we maybe leverage some of our free agent players in benefiting us when we are going to be relevant? Don't you think that's just a basic logical thought process that most other MLB teams use and operate under?
It's some do, but there was a lot of really extreme generalities in there. Just like no, I don't think any of that. I thought a lot of what you just said wasn't particularly fair.
It's basic. It is somewhat of basic protocol, right? So, like, look, I know that we're not going to contend.
Operate that way. And a lot of those teams are mediocre and bad as well.
And they're trying to get better. Right, that's the point. They're not a good team.
The Rockies aren't trying. They're hanging out in their office all day playing Nintendo. The Rockies,
and that's a problem.
Sorry,
folks.
That's what it is. The Rockies aren't even trying. This is the worst narrative in pro sports. This idea that there are front offices of people out there, professional athletes, coaches, managers, GMs, a lot of owners don't give a shit. They really are hands-off owners. Dick Monfort isn't one of them. Dick Monfort goes to every single spring training game. He goes to every practice. He goes to every game. And he doesn't sit in the box. He sits in the front row.
That might be a problem. Whether you're hands-on or hands-off, it's about the end result, right?
The people who run the Colorado Rockies are just in there like, they're working these 12-hour days. These guys are in there from sunup to sundown every day working on making this team better. And to just flippantly suggest that they don't care, that they're not trying.
So I never said that. I thought you were going somewhere and I was trying to go with you. I was trying to go with you on something. I don't.
But this is what it comes down to. People really believe this and you're playing what, into this notion.
What do I believe? I don't want to talk about people, Drew. I'm tired of talking about other people. Talk to me.
You just said they're not trying to get better. You just said.
No, I didn't. You went with something and I was trying to go with you for the sake of the podcast. So go ahead and make an actual point.
Why did the other teams go by the basic protocol of – again, I don't think the Rockies are outside of basic
protocol. I'm sorry you don't know this, but I'm glad to explain it to you. If you can properally evaluate your team, and having an analytics team can be very helpful. You can go and look and say, look, we really aren't going to contend this year.
Stop condescending.
So you know what? Let's take some of these pieces that we can't use. Instead of wasting those assets – we can go ahead and make a trade so that when we are going to get good, when our farm system does get better. Now, tanking is a whole other thing. We know that. We know that that's something different. But you can make
I'm not a child. Stop.
You asked me a question. I answered you.
You're being remarkably condescending. Stop it.
I don't know what you know sometimes. I really don't. I hope this is entertaining for people. I really don't know what you know. And I'm trying to have a conversation with you and me without any fluff of what other people are saying. I want to know what you know and what you think. And we should, because we're trying to inform some people too.
Don't understand basic protocol. Just that's just the Rockies and I. What we don't understand is basic protocol. Not that seeing things a little bit.
Do you think that that's basic though? Don't you think that's pretty common? The Pirates just traded, you know, a guy.
Great.
The Cubs traded away guys.
Follow the
Cubs with their payroll. They were able to acknowledge something and make a move. Don't you think it's strange that Rockies, a team that has not had the same success as the Cubs in recent years, that they didn't do the same thing? Isn't that a little strange?
No, Patrick, I've spent years on this show explaining why the Rockies do things differently. And I think this is a part of that. I've explained it many, many times. I understand that you want them to go with basic protocol. I've tried to explain why I think it's different. And
you think they should?
Fine.
You do a good job of explaining why they do things. The biggest question is, should they be doing those things? Because
yes.
We know the lack of
That's
success
been my
they've
point
had.
The whole time. This idea that they haven't had success because they've done things differently is nonsense. They haven't done things differently enough. I just read in the paper of record, by the way, an extraordinarily biased panel from five national reporters who just have all the bones to pick with the Rockies. One thing they all agreed on at the very end, like, what should the Rockies do? And they were all like, everything outside the box, throw the box away. Everything has to be different. But then when the Rockies do things that are way different, these are the same groups of people that go, I can't get why they're doing this stuff. They don't understand how you're supposed to play baseball. Yeah, they do. Don't be so condescending.
Look, we understand. Yeah, we understand like doing things differently, right? We understand Coors Field. We understand altitude. Like those are the things, right? Building from within as far as the pitching goes. That's that. But then there's other just general stuff like, having a GM that you really, you know, truly believe in place so that you don't lose a season. Again, if Bill Schmidt's your guy, Bill Schmidt's your guy. Okay, great. It's having an analytics department. You have opportunities every year to improve your organization.
Interim GMs.
Every year you have an opportunity.
It's not the Rockies. It's the selling of it like the Rockies are the only team that has no idea what they're doing. It's like other teams have interim GMs too.
It's no, just, I know that. We know that. But I guess what I'm trying to get out of you, Drew, is again, this conversation about not just talking about what they do, because that's what they do and that's what they do. What should they be doing? And I think that's a lot of the conversation that gets missing, that's missing, that I would love to talk more about on the podcast. And some of the national media doesn't necessarily know what's going on. They're doing their thing. That's fine. But what we do on this show, I want to inform people and not say, hey, this is what they're doing. Well, let's talk about why. Let's talk about what they should do and maybe what they could do. And that's not saying they have to. And if they don't, they fail. It's informing people and saying, hey, look what other teams are doing and look at the success that they're having. Wouldn't it be cool if maybe your team did that? If they don't, they don't. That's fine. But I'm just trying to inform the fans a little bit better. That's all.
All of that has to be put. That's the same thing I'm doing. I'm also informing the fans about the full context of it, that it doesn't all work exactly that way. And so, yes, all of that stuff is true. And we should talk about, I've always been talking about what the Rockies should do. I feel like I've made that pretty clear.
You don't like to say that.
No, I don't like to predict the future. Like I said, I'm fine giving conditionals. What should they do? Like I said, the Rockies should trade Trevor Story if they get an offer that's more valuable.
And I think that goes without saying. I think we know that.
And I don't think that they're necessarily going to get an offer that's worth more. And so what I'm not going to assume, and again, this is what it's about for me. It's the assumptions. And it is setting them up to fail ahead of time, saying, if they don't trade them, I'm going to assume they did get an offer that was worth more than compensatory.
I'm never going to do that. I don't do that. I've never done that. I've never come on here once and done that.
But that's the only way in which you can say definitively that they made a mistake in not trading Trevor Story.
They had an all-star shortstop for 1 year, and all they got was a compensation pick when they could have gotten a lot more. That's it.
How do you know what they could have gotten? What could they have gotten then? You tell me.
Let's look at the package that the Cleveland Guardians got for Francisco Lindor.
And you know for a fact that an equivalent offer was offered to the Rockies for Trevor Story.
No, of course not. I'm talking about a similar shortstop of Trevor Story's ilk that when a team goes and manages it that way, again, the players that Cleveland ends up getting from the Mets ultimately may not turn out to be a pile of dog crap. But you know what? They said, look, we're not going to be re-signing Frankie Lindor, so we might as well try to get something for him so that our organization can benefit in the future. 1 year of one player, particularly in a down year, is not worth as much compared to five players with 30 years of control going forward. That's how teams operate.
We all understand.
Then why did you ask me? Why did you ask me what could they have done?
That's not necessarily because teams also can't do things that are not possible. And if no one's offering you that, you can't just say, "Well, shit."
Why wouldn't have anybody offered anything from Trevor Story? Do you find fault in his play?
It happens. I'm not going to until someone shows me. And
do you think Trevor Story is not valuable enough to get a similar draft? Similar trade compensation to Francisco Lindor last offseason?
I don't understand. That's a weird way to frame it. I think it's entirely possible the Rockies haven't gotten good offers. In fact, I know a couple of kinds of offers they were getting. Again, I don't know the specific names of the players. I know one of the – again, when
I,
usually
– I find it hard to believe that no one would want Trevor Story and offered fair compensation.
I don't think that's a fair way to frame it, that no one wants Trevor Story. I don't know that anyone wants Trevor Story.
It does sound like that's what you're suggesting, and that's what I'm saying sounds strange.
I'm suggesting that there's a very small group of teams in the first place for whom it would make sense to add Trevor Story, and at this particular moment in time, they haven't been interested in really moving anything of value for him, assuming, again, that while they'd like to have Trevor Story, especially the way he's been playing this season, they're not sure he puts them over the top. And so they're not going to move that kind of package for him. So
one thing I do want to address, and it might get lost in all of this, is that I think it is it's kind of a bad play for the Rockies to hold on to Trevor Story for the remainder of the season. And this is another one of the reasons why they should trade Trevor Story, because there's an assumption that they're going to get a compensation pick. And I think that could backfire. I don't know the future. Even if I were Tony Clark, I can't predict the future, what's going to happen in the CBA. But here are some scenarios. It's
really interesting to me, though, because the people who so badly want full tear down rebuild, like you have to tear it all down, trade every Marquez, all of them, get rid of everybody, full tear down, build for 5-6 years from now, are the same people that say, but you can't just hold on to Trevor Story because you don't know what the next CBA is going to mean for the compensatory pick. You want to plan a 5 or 6 year strategy around a CBA that does not exist yet, where everything in the negotiations is going to be about adding parity to the game of baseball, doing things like expanding the playoffs, maybe even creating a salary floor. And you think that teams should commit to this strategy that has might not even be viable 3-4 years from now. It shouldn't be. It should never have been viable in the first place. It's bad for the sport. So I just think it's interesting that, like, you're right. It's true in both cases. Like, you don't know what the next CBA is going to look like. Like, they could get rid of those compensatory picks. They almost certainly won't. They're going to be adding more stuff like that and trying to help those smaller and mid-market teams compete. But it's just kind of wild to me because it's like so much of what makes tanking in baseball work is the way the current CBA basically lets it be like the wild, wild west. And I think that's far more likely to change than the compensatory pick thing, which is just like an obvious thing that they added to try to help teams. And everyone seems to agree has been a good system. So you're right. Like, they could change that, but there's been almost
that could be totally changed. So we don't know necessarily what they're going to get. And then another scenario that, again, would you obviously hope this doesn't happen, but it can happen. You trade Trevor Story today, it doesn't matter what Trevor Story does the second half of the season. Doesn't matter what he does in the offseason. It doesn't matter what happens at the CBA. So you do get something. You're guaranteed to get something. Whereas if you hold on to him, you may get nothing. Because what could happen is if Trevor Story has a so-so year, he could be offered a qualifying offer. He could be given one of those. He accepts it. Okay, I get that is a good thing, right? Trevor Story does come back for another year in a year that they're probably not going to contend. But nevertheless, that's, you know, it makes you feel good. But now the Rockies are probably going to get the same exact thing they were going to get today in 2021. But they're going to get it in 2022 because you can't offer you can't give a qualifying offer to a player twice. So now they're not going to ever get a compensatory pick because of that scenario. If he's so-so, or if he gets hurt and he wants to reclaim some of his value. Well, these are scenarios, but again, say it has to be compensatory pick. I mean, again, gamble in that because there's gamble in that. Or what if it matches the compensatory pick? That still might be okay.
I'm not going to fry him if it comes just short or they go, no. And
again, we'll never know. We'll never know. But that's the thing. It's this idea that if you take care of the little things, the big things take care of themselves. And this is one of the reasons why the Rockies have been in the position that they've had for the duration of their existence is they need to do a lot more little things better, like operating, a little bit more efficiency at the trade deadline and possibly getting some value for these guys on expiring deals that you can still bring back in free agency if you want. And it just strengthens up your farm system. Again, a lot of other teams do it. They have success in doing it.
A lot of other teams do it and fail in doing it. But this was exactly what Jeff Breidich was talking about with his brain surgery comments and exactly why I defended him from that day until his last day as a Colorado Rocky.
Why do you hate the Denver media, Drew?
I do think it was the best thing that he said, because this is exactly what the analogy was about. And it was funny because people didn't understand the analogy while then getting mad at him for thinking he was smarter than everybody. He wasn't comparing himself to the smarts of a brain surgeon. What he was saying is that when a brain surgeon operates, they have access to a great wealth of information about what can and can't go wrong, about what needs to be done. And a lot of that information isn't public. And so while it's perfectly reasonable to come out and say, well, that didn't go well, to come out and say, here's what they should have done, that is a very dicey, and I agree with his analogy. It's, again, we don't have time to get into a debate over the definition of
Do you think the Rockies probably should have gotten more for Nolan Arenado?
Journalism.
Again, we'll never know the offers, but don't you think the Rockies should have gotten
them? Now, knowing what I know, I think the Rockies did about as well as they could have getting what they did at the time of the Nolan Arenado trade. Now, knowing that he was specifically forcing himself to one team, I think they did about as well as they could have in that trade. And actually, if you went and looked at it on baseball trade values, it was a net gain for the Rockies. Because Nolan Arenado had negative trade value, which is something that the Denver media will not educate you on while you're out there making a meme out of the $50 million. What was the $50 million about? Nolan Arenado had negative trade value. So did Adam Frazier, by the way. They just had to send $1.4 million along with him.
That's not what it was about, Drew. So they could get better prospects. He wasn't making a lot of money. No, those are two different things, Drew.
Okay. I'm done with you doing that for me for the day. We're going to wrap up. Thanks, everyone, for listening to this episode of the DNVR Rockies podcast. Make sure you're subscribing on the DNVR.com. Make sure you're following on social media at Patrick B. Lyons, at Drew Priestman, at DNVR_Rockies. You got to go out there. Oh, I already said subscribe to the channel. You do get the discounts. You get the bigger beer down at the bar. You get to hang out in the Discord channel where the conversation never stops. So thank you all for continuing to be absolutely awesome baseball fans out there. We'll keep being absolutely Patrick Lyons and Drew Priestman in here. And until next time, we will see you at the ballpark.
Mmm. The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.